Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Maria Bartiromo.
I'm Brian Kilmeade, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, December 7th, 2022. I'm Lisa Brady. An old COVID debate comes back around on Capitol Hill, just as the U.S. military is struggling to meet recruiting goals.
So the COVID vaccine, layered on top of the other issues, is just making what could have been just a difficult year, you know, a crisis.
I'm Dave Anthony. The attack that knocked out power in North Carolina has utilities everywhere reevaluating security.
What everybody fears most is that there is an outage, an attack, whether it's physical or cyber, that would cause what they call a cascading outage.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
How the U.S. military operates, including how it spends money, is in limbo for now, with an annual policy bill held up in Congress, partly over a renewed debate about the military's COVID vaccine mandate. Republicans making a renewed push for that mandate to be repealed. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer calls that befuddling.
COVID vaccines have saved lives. The military has had requirements about other vaccines for decades, and there hasn't been a problem.
House Democrats agreed to remove the mandate from the policy bill. That version would not reinstate service members discharged for not getting COVID shots, but a provision would ask the Pentagon to study potential remedies for members who were kicked out or had benefits cut. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell accuses Democrats of holding the National Defense Authorization Act hostage with non-defense related items.
The Democrats' failure to plan ahead for unrelated liberal pet priorities should not be creating uncertainty and confusion for the brave service members who keep us safe.
One of the items he singles out previously failed in the Senate, a permitting reform proposal that McConnell says is reform in name only. And that faces some bipartisan opposition as well. All of this adds up to another round of beat the clock on Capitol Hill, facing year-end deadlines on more than one bill, including the NDAA.
It's the thing that defines the policy and the authorizations for an entire year of the United States military. So it's very important. Without it, many new programs cannot start.
Retired Army Lieutenant General Tom Spohr is director of the Heritage Foundation's Center for National Defense.
The new policies that the Pentagon was hoping to put in place are frozen into last year's authorization. So there's really no forward progress without a National Defense Authorization Act.
Right. It's not the money, but it enables how the money is spent, right? Is that?
Yeah, exactly. And it provides the guidance from Congress on how they think the military should be organized and operate. And so from that point of view, you know, usually it has a number of improvements and reforms. And so without those, the Pentagon is just stuck in the old way of doing business.
So now we come to the debate over the vaccine mandate in the military, which initially was in the bill. And apparently Democrats have agreed with Republicans pressing to strip that out of the bill, which means there would no longer be a COVID vaccine mandate in the military. How important is that debate? I mean, thousands of service members have already been let go because of that mandate.
Yeah, we're in the midst of the worst recruiting crisis that the military's had since the start of the all-volunteer force. And so the COVID mandate is preventing people that are reluctant to get the vaccine from entering, and it's also leading to the discharge of thousands of service members. And so from just a manpower point of view alone, it's really important this year, I think, to get this settled.
What about the argument, though, that this could open up the rest of the military vaccine mandates to challenges? Because there are a variety of vaccine requirements in the military, right?
Oh, yeah. There's at least 9 mandatory vaccines. I recall getting yellow fever and diseases I really had never heard of. But when you're a young soldier, they just march you into the hospital and you get whatever they tell you you need. These other vaccines, in my experience, have never really been controversial. So I don't I don't know. I can't predict that whether this will open up new challenges to those vaccines. I've never heard anybody even, other than not wanting to get the anthrax shot because it really hurt when it went in. I've never really heard anybody express, you know, displeasure or disagreement with getting one of these other vaccines.
Do you think that transmissibility could be folded into this debate? Because the CDC really acknowledges now that, you know, the COVID vaccine doesn't necessarily stop transmission. You can get vaccinated and still end up catching it, but it's just supposed to lessen the severity of it, lessen the risk of death and serious illness. Is that a dividing line between this and some of those other vaccines?
Yeah, I think that's to it. Again, you know, we have moved on in our understanding of COVID. And the other part that people don't talk about is that the military is usually composed of young people. You know, most of them are below the age of 30, who are the group that are at least risk from COVID, especially from any serious, you know, they'll catch it, but they won't have any serious consequence of it. So you have to put that into the mix and decide whether or not the mandate is worth it when it's resulting in the loss of all these either potential or people that are already in the military.
I know a big part of the reasoning behind it, I seem to remember, was readiness. I guess what hurts readiness more, in your opinion, not having everyone vaccinated or having fewer troops because of the mandate?
I think today we're looking at the fewer troops argument. You know, the Army in 2022 failed to recruit what it needed to. And so they are shrinking in size. They're getting smaller as we watch them. And they're not only that, but then the soldiers that they're discharging. And this is a phenomenon extending to all the services. I was at the Reagan Defense Forum this past weekend, and General Berger, the Marine Corps Commandant, talked about at least 20 to 30% of young people haven't gotten the COVID vaccine and don't intend to. And so that's a population that is really excluded from potential military service.
And can we put it into context for people? When we say recruitment is down, maybe just sticking with the Army as an example, how much are we talking about?
Yeah, so in the last fiscal year, 2022, they had hoped at the start to recruit some 70,000 people into the service, and they were able to recruit less than 50,000. So they missed their goal by at least 25,000 soldiers. And so it's not getting better either. In 2023, they think it's going to be worse, and they're prepared for an army that is much smaller than the one we have now. And so this recruiting crisis that we're in the midst of right now shows no signs of abating.
Do we have any sense, though, of how much a factor the vaccine mandate is with that, or are other issues more of a factor when it comes to recruiting problems?
Yeah, I don't think it is the main factor. The main factor is probably the, you know, the overall shortage of people to work. The talent, with the war for talent, is really strong. And so you can see many businesses and corporations trying to hire people. But when you're in the midst of a crisis, every little thing hurts. And so the COVID vaccine layered on top of the other issues is just making what could have been just a difficult year, you know, a crisis.
In addition to the overall military numbers, what are the effects of a recruiting shortage? For instance, are service members not able to specialize in certain areas because there are fewer people to fill positions?
Yeah, that is one impact. And so if you'd come in and you wanted to be cyber or a cook or any one of a million occupations that the military has to decide first to fill their most critical shortages. So you may not have that option. I mean, the other things that are going to come from this are units, military units are going to be short. Ships are going to be short sailors. The Air Force is going to be short pilots for their planes, and the Army is going to be short soldiers for their combat units, their battalions and their brigades. And so, you know, you have to be ready at a moment's notice, and these units with these shortages are going to be less ready than they were a couple of years ago.
Today is December 7th in terms of recruitment, military readiness. Would you be worried that America, you know, would be ready if there were ever another Pearl Harbor-like attack?
I am. I'm worried right now. And it doesn't have to be a Pearl Harbor attack. It can be any one of a number of different scenarios. And unfortunately, history shows that every 20 years or so, the U.S. military gets itself into some sort of a conflict or war. And so that time is coming, and we don't get the luxury of deciding where and when it's going to happen. We have to be ready at all times. And so this decline we're seeing, which really has no forecasted end right now, is very worrisome.
The White House has said the president agrees with the defense secretary that it's important for all Americans to be vaccinated against COVID. There does seem to be some bipartisan pressure building, though, on this mandate issue. Would you be hopeful about this effort to lift the vaccine mandate at this point?
It's a great question. So, you know, I'm looking out my window at the halls of Congress right now, and they are, as we speak, debating that very provision. So it's hard to say how it's going to come out. There are very strong feelings on both sides. I think there's reason. You know, the latest news, as you said at the start, is that we think there is a repeal of the vaccine mandate in the National Defense Authorization Act. Whether that holds till the very end and is signed into law by the president, I think, is anybody's guess at this moment.
Should Americans be concerned, or are you concerned, when either side in Washington holds up this particular authorization bill for any reason, you know, no matter what the issue is?
First off, I would say the Defense Authorization Act has been wildly delayed. I mean, both houses of Congress were essentially done with this bill in June, maybe July at the latest. And for reasons that are inexplicable to me, it has been delayed now. And here we are in December talking about this when this should have been disposed of months ago. I'm one of these people that favors quality over quantity. So I would, if there were some legitimate warfighting concerns that were still being debated about the National Defense Authorization Act, I'd be willing to delay it. But that's not what's happening right now. They're arguing over things that have nothing to do with our national defense, but have been attached to this legislation for reasons of expediency and the hope that it will help them pass when they might not have passed on their own.
At the same time, we have Russia's war in Ukraine continuing, generating a lot of military assistance from the U.S. for Ukraine. The Deputy Secretary of State, Wendy Sherman, says the U.S. has enough of a stockpile to keep helping Ukraine with drawdowns of military assistance. Historically, how big is that stockpile?
The stockpile is good. It's adequate. It's probably the biggest stockpile of any country in the world, but it's going to come short in some cases. You know, as famously you've heard that we've used up a third of our Javelin missiles and a quarter of our Stinger missiles, and that was months ago. And so we continue to draw those down, whereas production for these munitions is just now beginning to start. And so we are getting close to the levels where we should be concerned.
Are those things also part of what's authorized in the bill?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there, and not only are these things authorized in that bill, but there's reforms. There's more money. There's ways to accelerate and make our munitions producers more effective by investing in their capital buildings and their tools. So I think, you know, every day that we don't get this National Defense Authorization Act is another day that our production capabilities don't rise to meet the occasion.
What would you say to any Americans concerned about the overall state of the U.S. military? We hear a lot about, you know, the moves that China's making to beef up its own military and build it bigger and bigger. But you hear our U.S. defense leaders saying, you know, America still has the finest fighting force in the world. What would you say to concerned Americans?
Well, there's two things that are true at the same time. The United States has the best military in the world, bar none. Its leaders and its equipment is excellent. On the other hand, I would say our U.S. military is not adequate to what we have defined in our national strategies. To deter both China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea requires a bigger military than we have right now. More ships. Most of our military experts tell us we need 400 Navy ships, and we have about 290 today. And so while our military is excellent, it isn't big nor modern enough right now.
Retired Army Lieutenant General Tom Spohr, Director of the Heritage Foundation's Center for National Defense. Thank you very, very much for your time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
This is Carol Markowitz with your Fox News commentary coming up.
It has been a tough week in a part of North Carolina known for great golf courses and retirement living, the Pinehurst area, where a lot of people have been without power for days. And in many cases, that also means no heat on chilly below freezing nights after an attack on power substations.
No group has stepped up to acknowledge or accept it. They're the ones that done it. So, yeah, I call them cowards.
Moore County Sheriff Ronnie Fields is getting help from the FBI. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says,
"We condemn this apparent attack on critical infrastructure. Federal law enforcement continues to support the investigation, and we will continue to monitor the situation as that investigation plays out."
The attack on Saturday cut the power to about 45,000 homes and businesses.
I want to thank the people who are working so hard to restore power. It's very complex what they are doing, and they've been working around the clock to do that.
Governor Roy Cooper says they've also brought in generators to care homes and facilities in need in Moore County, while the attack itself has utilities everywhere reassessing security.
Every once in a while, we get these really nasty reminders that it is a fairly fragile, certainly interconnected system.
Michael Balboni is president of Redland Strategies, a utility security expert who used to chair the Homeland Security Committee as a state senator in New York.
And what everybody fears most is that there is an outage, an attack, whether it's physical or cyber, that would cause what they call a cascading outage. We saw that in, I believe, in 2004 when a tree limb hit a power line in Ohio and caused a cascading effect all throughout the Northeast. What happened in over this weekend, I guess it began at 7 o'clock on Saturday night,
yeah,
in Moore County, was that you had an individual or individuals who gained access to the site of a substation. And the relevance there is that there are approximately 55,000 substations throughout the nation. And so if you take out one of the substations, you're going to affect varying sizes of population in terms of their power.
In the end, it seems to me, in a world where we have all this cyber espionage and cyber threat, they just go in and they start shooting. It's pretty
simple.
In some ways, and they attack a substation. So I assume you can do an awful lot of damage doing that.
Well, that's what they demonstrated. And what we know so far, you know, the FBI is investigating. No arrests have been made so far in the Moore County attack on the substation. But we do know that it was rifle fire. And we do know that there was a gate that was intentionally taken off of the hinges to gain access to the facility. There were two different attacks at different times in the same station. I'm sorry, two different substations. So it was not something there where there was an errant bullet that came from a hunter, say, or something like that. Not at all. This was a targeted attack on these two substations.
There certainly are people who are out there that have been studying this and wanting to do this very kind of damage. And I know over the years you've been studying them.
Well, I think what is happening here is obviously different motivation, different ideology. The Department of Homeland Security has issued reports talking about a domestic terrorism target. And one of the chances I get a chance to sit on the domestic terrorism task force for New York State. And we have been looking at the whole issue of domestic terrorism. And what we realize is that there's a lot of different ideological perspectives on this, motivations. And there is some indication that, you know, there are lone wolves or coordinated groups that would seek to take down portions of the power grid.
In 2020, there came out a document. It was 14 pages long, and it was put together by groups with the goal of trying to attack critical infrastructure. And it's a how-to guide. And part of it is how you use guns and armor-piercing rounds to go into transformers to destroy them. I assume that's been part of the work on securing facilities, trying to study that guide.
You know, there are always three different things that you take a look at in terms of an attack. One is does the individual have the access? Do they have the means? And do they have the motivation? So that document provided the last aspect of that, which is the motivation. Going forward, though, the question becomes, is this the only threat? You know, and the answer to that is no, it's not. There's a cybersecurity threat that has been evidenced by the FBI for a very long time. There's a concern, particularly after you had a particular attack in cyber called SolarWinds, which the malware was in the system for a very long time, and it was doing surveillance. And the question is there malware from, say, a foreign state actor in our utility grids? So there's a lot of concerns about this. The question becomes, what's the ultimate goal? To take down the entire system? That sounds like a self-defeating goal, unless you just want anarchy.
And some do. Obviously, some are hoping for that. But and it wouldn't take long, right? If the population was out of power for a week, we've seen movies like this.
Yeah, you know, interesting. So I lived through Sandy here in New York, and that was always a concern. If the power went out, and then you had freezing temperatures, which is exactly what happened in the Sandy hurricane. You know, what would people do? There was, it was a very large hurricane, but there was a limited area. But people are able to survive. You got to go back to the days before you had, you know, the kind of luxuries and conveniences we have now. But for a short period of time, you could do this. The question is, are the things that you could do to the grid where you would take it out for, you know, 6 months or a year? And that's really the thing. That's the prioritization that folks who operate utilities have focused on to prevent that from happening.
If they are able to take out the internet and they're able to take out our phone service, and then you can't get gas out of the ground, those are the kinds of things, and you can't access your bank account. Those are the things that lead to the chaos.
Right. It's very unlikely that you could have one attack that or series of attacks that would result in that kind of a catastrophic event itself.
What happened in North Carolina is smaller potatoes compared to the attack in California in 2013 that is still unsolved to this day and is closely studied by the utilities industry. First, they cut fiber optic cables. Then they started shooting, not just damaging the infrastructure, also spilling a giant oil drum used to help cool high voltage lines. Then they fled when police arrived.
What happened was there was a substation that fed Silicon Valley and is in Metcalf, California. And there were two elements to the attack. The first is that the attackers gained access to a vault, a cable vault, and for the substation, and they cut cable and then proceeded to pour sniper fire onto the substation. Estimated 200 rounds were fired, taking out various elements of the substation. So the individual obviously had detailed inside information as to how the substation worked, where the vulnerabilities were, and they took advantage of that information.
Now, they haven't caught anybody. How long was there an outage there?
It was a very long time. I mean, luckily they were able to do a workaround and bring other power grids up to speed so they could provide power. But it was a long time, and it sent a shockwave through the entire utility industry, especially the Northeastern Reliability Council, which is called NERC, is one of the foremost regulators of the utility, and they put out a critical infrastructure protection requirement of the physical security steps you have to take to secure a substation.
Okay, so that led to more security. Then what happened in North Carolina? I mean, how'd they get through a gate? I mean, how much security is there? It makes me wonder how much security there is at these facilities.
Well, again, you know, they can be remote. They can be at a place where you don't necessarily have eyes on the target the entire time. Again, 55,000, you're going to have varying degrees of access, which is the big concern. You know, now, I assure you that since those attacks and more, there is now a reexamination of the security posture in all utilities and their substations. And that's going on right now.
And that's not just in North Carolina, right? That means everywhere.
No, that's across the country.
So more security physically there, more surveillance maybe? I mean, both?
Yeah. So, I refer to it as guards, gates, guns, and gadgets. You don't really put a guard by a substation unless it's absolutely critically important. But, the technology of having the cameras, having really good gates, shielding the most vulnerable aspects of the substation from things like, sniper fire, being able to have a rapid response capability should someone detect it in the area. These are all the key components to infrastructure protection. So the most immediate concern is that someone's going to take a look at this, now it's viral on the internet, and say, well, why don't I just go take a gun and see what I can do? You know, maybe let me try it and not have any of the ideological issues, and therefore not be on, Facebook or TikTok or anything like that saying that they're going to do this. That's always the most dangerous scenario because you never see it coming. That's one of my principal concerns when you have an event like this.
So what do you think is a bigger threat? A physical attack like what happened in North Carolina or something in the cyber world, something like Russia or North Korea might do?
I think it's the cyber threat is much more prevalent, especially after what we saw in Ukraine back in 2018, where you can't pinpoint somebody who was the specific attacker, but we'll assume it was Russia that launched an attack on New Year's, right before New Year's Eve, and took out two power plants in I think it was around Kiev. And obviously a prelude possibly to the upcoming attacks. Do you see that kind of capability? It makes you really wonder whether or not that's something that utilities in the United States could be vulnerable to. So I personally, having studied this for a while, I think that that's its biggest threat. But you don't discount any threats. You try to respond and be prepared for every threat to the extent that you can.
Generally speaking, though, do you think our infrastructure is safe?
I think our infrastructure is secure because of monitoring. Can we do better? Yeah, we can always do better. The threats evolve. We need to evolve with them.
Michael Balboni, President, Managing Director of Redland Strategies, former Homeland Security Advisor for New York State. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. 2022 is coming to a close, and as we look back on the year, it's time to reflect on some key themes. Merriam-Webster and Oxford English Dictionaries released their words of the year, and it seems like they had some different takeaways. Oxford English dubbed goblin mode the word, or phrase, really, of the year. It's a slang term referring to, quote, a type of behavior which is unapologetically self-indulgent, lazy, or greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. It encourages people to lean into their uncurated, self-indulgent, and sometimes mischievous ways. The phrase was chosen by way of online vote, winning 93% of the 340,000 votes cast. It beat out Metaverse and hashtag I Stand With. Oxford reps credit pandemic lockdowns to shifts in attitude and say this year's phrase acknowledges that we're not always our most idealized, curated selves that we portray on social media. Last week, Merriam-Webster announced its word of the year was gaslighting, defined as psychological manipulation of a person, usually over an extended period of time, that causes the victim to question the validity of their own thoughts, a tactic used by abusers in relationships or even corporations as a way to mislead the public. There's also medical gaslighting, where a healthcare professional dismisses the patient's symptoms as something all in your head. Lookups for the word on Merriam-Webster.com increased 1,740% in 2022 over the year before. Unlike Oxford, Merriam's word of the year was not selected by the people. Last year, the two dictionaries saw more eye to eye. 2021, Oxford's word of the year was vax. Merriam-Webster's was vaccine. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Carol Markowitz.
What's on your mind?
First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby in the baby carriage, right? What if Americans stop playing that out? America is heading toward a birth rate crisis. A new Institute for Family Studies analysis of 2020 census data found 1 in 6 women reached the end of their childbearing years hasn't given birth. This is a growing concern for the country. In 2007, the average number of children per woman was 2.7. By 2020, it was already 1.6. Already, Senator Chuck Schumer is looking to fix our population plunge by granting citizenship to all illegal immigrants. The problem actually goes beyond birth rates. The focus on childbearing obscures a different calamity. Marriage rates are in collapse. Relationships in general are harder to come by. A 2020 Pew study found 35% of never married single men and 37% of never married single women had never even been in a committed relationship. That's a lot of people on their own. In August, a rather tame Psychology Today article about the rise of lonely single men went inexplicably viral. Writer Greg Matos, noting men are increasingly single, said the broad trends of their overrepresentation on dating apps and lack of dating skills, along with women's rising standards, don't portend well for the future of men finding love. Matos' piece hit a nerve across the internet as women mock the idea that their higher standards had left more men single. But women, of course, are just as single and will face the same problems as men. Part of the issue is that the splendor of family life is often a well-kept secret. We read articles about how wonderful it is to be single and see social media posts celebrating the fun of singlehood. Comedian Chelsea Handler often posts to her social media how fantastic it is to have the bed all to herself and how much she enjoys having no weekend obligations. But just like boys don't wear boys run the world t-shirts, and the richer a person is, the less likely she'll be wearing designer logos across her clothing, it would be gauche for people in happy relationships to let the world know the truth. It's impossible to imagine a comedian making regular videos about how thrilled he is to be married. In fact, when a couple is a little too open about their hashtag blessed relationship on social media, we immediately suspect things aren't actually going that well offline. The result is that people only see the bad side of marriage and family. Their married friends don't sit around over margaritas praising their spouses. Few talk about how amazing and fulfilling it is to have children. Instead, people highlight the struggles of marriage and family so as not to make anyone else feel bad about how incredible it actually is. We hear about only the negative aspects of family and only the absolutely blissful parts of singlehood. It's no wonder one has started to grow in popularity over the other. When people realize they've been lied to, it might be too late. So, married people, do your friends a favor and don't hide your happiness. Tell the truth about the bad times, but don't pretend there aren't many good ones. Rave about your spouse behind his or her back. Be honest about how fun it is to have children. Nothing is ever perfect, whether you're single or married. It doesn't have to be. Let's just be real about how good it can be. This is Carol Markowitz, columnist for the New York Post.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.